Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. Today I want to read a powerfully inspirational piece of writing from Eric Butterworth from his book, Unity of All Life, that deals with going from indigence to affluence, from poverty to prosperity. This particular book covers a variety of cool aspects dealing with the unity of all life in all of its different dynamics, in particular the polarities from a variety of subjects. And this one deals with the study of affluence in relation to indigence and poverty. Eric Butterworth was an amazing New Thought teacher. We've covered him in several episodes in the past. From poverty to prosperity. No study of the unity of all life would be complete without dealing with poverty, that most deadly and prevalent of all diseases. We are confronted with the strange paradox of affluence and indigence existing side by side in a prodigal universe. It is an irrefutable fact that there are in the world more substance, more resources, more real wealth than the world can possibly use. And yet, we have conditions of poverty. Poverty implies a lack of the goods needed to sustain life in mediocre contentment. And there is no denying the fact that millions of people on Earth live below that standard. However, it is interesting that despite the fluctuations of our own economy, there is no real change in the supply of the basic stuff. We think of expanding wealth, but the quantity of substance within the Earth's atmosphere has varied little in the billions of years since its formation. A few meteorites have crashed through to be buried in the Earth, and a few space vehicles have been sent off into the solar system, but otherwise, all is pretty much the same. As a citizen of the universe with an amazingly creative mind, you have been endowed with the potential to create a heaven on Earth. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. Psalms 8:6. What you do with the wealth of the earth depends upon your shape of consciousness. You live in an unlimited universe that will accommodate you with pretty much what you have the consciousness to accept. Poverty in a state of consciousness and prosperity is a state of consciousness. What is the difference between a patch of weeds and a beautifully cultivated garden? No difference, basically. Each was produced by the fact that seeds were scattered into the soil, which brought forth the plants into manifestation. The one is cared for, the other is allowed to take its course. The difference is not in the garden, but in the gardener, and so concerns your life as compared with others. The difference is not in the world, but in you. Prosperity is a way of living and thinking, and not just money or things. You are rich if you can think rich thoughts. Thoughts that are constructive, optimistic, and unlimited. You are poor if you class yourself in this way. Not understanding this, you may seek to erase poverty by taking money out of certain pockets and putting it into others. Dollar remedies will no more solve the poverty problem than expensive prescription blanks will heal illness. A favorite topic for heated political discussion in the war on poverty or the anti-poverty program of the federal government. It is certainly good that we are becoming more conscious of the segment of our society that has been almost socially invisible. Unfortunately, we are now compounding our past errors by dealing with poverty as a condition rather than as a state of consciousness. In the spirit of charity, we have taken steps to see that the poor are provided for. Sadly, we are finding that the more poor we provide for, the more there are to be provided for. Some of our large urban areas are on the verge of strangling to death in their welfare programs. Perhaps we need to take another look at the scriptural question of Cain. Am I my brother's keeper? The religious orientation of past years has insisted yes. This has been the strong influence toward charity and the care of the poor. Who would say that the thousands of people and scores of religious orders and social welfare agencies devoted to helping the poor have not been motivated with the highest of ideals? Certainly their record of serving the indigent has been an epic of dedication, self-sacrifice, and magnanimity. Within the concept, there will always be the needy poor. There will always be a need for these wonderful people and groups to minister unto them. However, there are two basic errors in the brother's keeper approach. One, if you insist upon being a keeper, you will eventually be faced with the resentment of the kept. Both welfare and most foreign aid tend to destroy the self-respect of men and nations. They will take the handouts in quiet desperation, but seethe inwardly with resentment. Two, most important, you are dealing with effects and not causes. In the end, though you may take great pride in your acts of charity, in terms of helping the basic problem, you are engaged in an excuse in futility, like trying to hold back the tides with a broom. You are not your brother's keeper, you are your brother's brother. Poverty has become a fixation in the consciousness of man. The poor have been dealt with as a breed of people, as some think of pigeons, which are dutifully fed each day in the parks and squares of the world. But man is not a hungry pigeon. He is a person with a God potential to be discovered and released. Any really effective help must be based on genuine interest in his growth toward wholeness as a person, based on a belief in his ability to grow. Now, there is, in the current anti-poverty programs, much that is good. The effort to educate and train individuals for productive work is commendable. Unfortunately, these programs are too little and too poorly coordinated to do the job. Welfare has become a way of life, both for the recipient and for the administrators. Thus, there is an inertia that is not easy to overcome, but it must be overcome if our society is to realize its full potential. There is an alternative to the war on poverty. All war is wrong, simply because when we fight something, we endow it with power to fight back. Man has been fighting this war on poverty for thousands of years with very little progress. What we have done is to make the poverty idea a fixation in the consciousness of mankind. We must deny poverty as a force to be contended with. Not that conditions of poverty do not exist, but they do not tell the whole truth. We must start selling the truth that prosperity is the law of the universe and there is abundance for all. We must work to affirm and establish in the consciousness of mankind the prosperity idea. Welfare must be returned to the root idea of faring well, or helping the individual to become established in a state of well-being. We must stop thinking handout and start thinking hand up. All that is done for people must be done with the idea of helping the individual up to a more creative involvement in life. Programs must deal with more education than the dole. Just taking people out of the slums is not sufficient. We must take the slums out of the people and help them to develop the consciousness that will attract and sustain better things. All welfare programs should be based on the principle of giving and receiving. No able-bodied person should ever be encouraged to break this universal law by taking something for nothing. Some form of work involvement should be provided for everyone receiving public assistance wherever this is practical. Otherwise, we encourage the person to receive without giving, which makes them a stepchild of the universe. He is thus not involved in the dynamics of living. In time, inertia sets in and he loses the capacity to be involved. Some 700 years ago, Maimonides dealt with this very problem. Anticipate charity by preventing poverty. Assist the reduced fellow man by teaching him a trade or by pointing him in the way of business so that he may earn his livelihood and not be forced to the dreadful alternative of holding out his hand for charity. This is the highest step and the summit of charity's golden ladder. Life is growth. People can evolve, develop, and change all people. Any system that really seeks to be a brother's brother must be based on the truth that there is a potential for prosperous thinking and living in every person. We cannot erase the problem of people in one great leap from the bottom to the top of the economic heap. Indigence must be grown out of in a thought-by-thought process. As the artist progresses by learning new techniques, the underprivileged poor must learn new values, transforming their self-image and their way of life. The step from indigence to affluence can be taken only by individual initiative. Society may and certainly should help to train the indigent for better things, as the good gardener trains the rose bush with the trellis. But the person must make his own declaration of independence from the self-limiting thoughts of poverty and welfare. He must determine that he will stand up in the consciousness of the unity of all life, in which he is a son and heir to the riches of the universe, and not just a stepchild. You live in a universe that is whole and opulent. There is no lack in the universe, and prosperity is its law, and not just a condition of the fortunate. The substance of God is limitless. You live in it and have being in it, like a fish lives in water. Can the fish really lack for water? Can you ever lack for God's substance? The universe is unlimited, and you are an unlimited part of the limitless universe. More than this, as the universe is in the particle, and the kingdom of God is within man, so the allness of God's substance is always within you, even when your pockets are empty and your bank account is overdrawn. It is a metaphysical principle, but then the reality of the universe and of you is non-material. The universe owes you a living. The world did not produce itself and did not produce the things that live upon it. Things that appear on the earth are the further expression of the same system that produced it in the first place. If the universal system should break down, then every part of the system would break down, because there is a unity of all life. Every single blade of grass is supported by the universal system. Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow, Matthew 6:28. And you are a part of this creation, a product of the same system, but you are a much more complete expression. How much more shall he clothe you, O ye of little faith, Matthew 6:30. Thus the universe is responsible for your being here, and for your supply and support. It is your natural heritage. The universe owes you a living. Furthermore, it is glad to give it to you. This is why Jesus included in his great prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread," Matthew 6:11. He was pointing to your divine inheritance, directing you to claim it every day. He also said, "It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom," Luke 12:33, to give you prosperity, abundance, affluence. However, with every privilege comes a responsibility. The universe owes you a living, but you owe the world a life. You are an integral part of a cosmic superintelligence that makes us receivers of its truth and responsive organs of its activity. You are a product of the universe, a child of God, with the Holy Spirit or the whole spirit of infinite mind involved in you. But you are also an instrument for its creative expression. The infinite is seeking to say and do something through you and as you. And this is your life's responsibility. The ignorant and deluded have sometimes proclaimed, "The world owes me a living." Their attitude has been, "And because they are alive, they deserve money, possessions, and a good job." The answer to this is that life is lived from within outward. Because you are a part of a universal system, you are ceaselessly provided for from within. It is the power to become a creative expression of life, the power to think, to produce, and to become a provider in the world without. Yes, the world owes you a living, but you owe the world a clear channel of creativity. You are a whole creature in a whole universe. But your purpose in life is to let the kingdom come in earth as it is in heaven, Matthew 6:9, 10. The average person goes off into the world every day to make a living. No one will ever find success in work that he thinks of as a living. The basic need for all is to make a life, and work, be it ever so menial or unrewarding, is the opportunity to release our inherent potential, to fulfill our creative energies, to become the person we are created to be. unless a worker receives more than his pay from his job, though his salary may run into five figures, he is grossly underpaid. This inequity can be corrected only by a change in his thinking. One man was cleaning up his work as his desk one Friday evening when he suddenly noticed an envelope that had not been opened. Apparently, it had been placed there while he was on the telephone. He opened it and read, to his shock and dismay, a notice of termination of his job. His entire department was being eliminated, and his position along with it. After all the years of his life given to the corporation, he found himself filled with resentment and the sense of injustice. Long past his planned time of departure, he sat slumped in his chair in utter despair and defeat. Someone had said that the idea of retirement is the greatest shock the system can sustain. He thought through all the terrible things that could happen to him. He would have to sell his house and curtail his whole way of life. He was not really prepared for retirement, and yet he was considered too old to get another job. The specter of lack, poverty, and destitution hovered on the horizon. Even more severe was the shock of feeling that he was no longer needed, useless, through, washed up. He noticed a spider on the desk and unconsciously brushed it off. Suddenly, he was watching in amazement as the tiny creature automatically spun a strand to bear its weight and swung gracefully to the floor. He began to wonder why, if this tiny creature could draw forth from within itself a reserve of substance to meet his emergency, why could man not do as much? For many hours, he sat deep in troubled thoughts that gradually turned to creative meditation. Finally, the conviction came through the source of his supply. His security was not in jobs or money or houses or lands, but in his unity with all life, his oneness with the mind of the infinite. He might be taken from a payroll, but no one would cut him off from the infinite processes of his own mind. This, he realized, was his real lifeline. This man was of an artistic manner. Being forced to do office work had always irked him. Figuratively, he had been earning his livelihood by the sweat of his brow. In his spare time, he had done a little writing, which occasionally found publication. He had secretly longed for the opportunity to write for a living. Now, he realized, was that opportunity. So a whole new frame of mind took possession of him. He blessed his retirement, thanked God for the new door that had opened before him. He left the office with a buoyancy and confidence that surprised even himself. It would be good if we could report that the man went on to great success as a writer. Real life isn't made up of great success or great failure, but of an infinite number of levels of living in between. And true greatness depends more on the inner overcomings than outer achievements. Our man did accomplish some great things within himself. He gained a new sense of mastery over himself, a new sense of satisfaction and happiness. And he did enough good writing to earn a few checks each month, enough to more than double his half-pay retirement income. Within every person is the unborn possibility of success and creative activity. Ours is the privilege of giving birth to it. This is the dynamic implication of the unity of all life. The success potential is within every person. Prosperity is the cosmic whole in our every endeavor. There is a reality of affluence even within areas of indigence. There is always an abundance or all sufficiency of substance, whether we see it or not. We are dealing with the order of the universe. 1 + 1 = 2, even if we do not have the figures to express the fact. In the 5th chapter of Luke, there is an account of Jesus preaching to the multitude from the bow of Simon Peter's boat. When his discourse was completed, he said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught." Simon objected, "Master, we have toiled all night and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, as thy word, I will let down the net." So they put out into the deep and cast the nets overboard, and soon enclosed such a large catch of fish, they had to call to help to haul it in. The fish were there, but they had to push out into the deep and let down their nets. In the symbology of the Bible, fish represents ideas, and sea refers to mind. Prosperity and abundance spring forth from mind through an abundance of ideas. The good we seek is already within us. The whole of spirit is potentially focused in our individual unconsciousness in terms of divine ideas. To let down our nets means to use our gifts of God to put into use what we have. The man who learned the great lessons from the spider was motivated to let down his nets within himself. Out of this came a whole new way of life, which led to security and abundance. He didn't suddenly have money in the bank, but he had the conviction of the unity of all life, the awareness of his inheritance as an organ of universal activity, and the guidance to do the things that ultimately reshaped his life. There's a region in Texas where no rain fell upon the soil in 7 years. It became baked thoroughly dry, and deep cracks opened in the earth. On the surface, there was nothing but a dismal powdery dust in which nothing could grow. Previously, the whole area had been blanketed with that beautiful flower of Texas, the blue bonnet. People were now saying that the soil was ruined and nothing would ever grow in it again. Then the rains came. In 24 hours, 7 inches of rain soaked into the earth. The sun came out, and later, still more rain fell. Finally, a strange thing happened. The blue bonnets began to come up, and the earth was soon covered with blossoms. Where did they come from? Nobody planted them. The seed had been in the earth all the time, through the long, dry years of drought, waiting for the moisture to quicken them to life. Through all the 7 years, it could have been said that there were flowers there, even when there were no blossoms visible to the sight of the eye. So it is with our experience in life. When things look dark, if we will put away from the shoreline of depending upon the security of other people or jobs or material things, in the depths of spiritual inspiration, we will find unsuspected possibilities blossoming forth within us. Jesus once said, "Say not, there are 4 months, and then cometh the harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, that they are white already unto harvest." John 4:35. During the years of the drought, a man of vision could have said to the intelligent farmer, "Lift up your eyes, for the fields are now covered with blue bonnets." And we might say to the person faced with unemployment and poverty, "Lift up your eyes, for there is abundance and opportunity for you." There is abundance right where you are. This is true because of the unity of all life. Identify yourself with abundance. Claim abundance. Wherever you see affluence, say to yourself, "I am one with that." Begin to act as if success and prosperity are yours, and that is impossible for you to fail. Accustom yourself to thinking that you are surrounded by a divine presence that wishes you only good, because you are an organ of its activity. Get a new thought about money. Money passes through your hands many times a day. It may be a little money if you happen to be on welfare, or it may be millions if you happen to be a person of affluence. But you are constantly buying and selling and earning and spending. Money is an extension of the person who uses it. Your thoughts and attitudes color it, making it filthy lucre or blessed divine substance. If you think positively and create about your money, you actually multiply its effectiveness. If you criticize and depreciate it, you actually tend to dissipate it and repel it from you. You may think that money always means abundance. Strangely enough, for most of us, it has become a symbol of lack. We tend to think of it in relationship to what we would like to have or think we should have. The figure on your paycheck may well symbolize to you injustice, unappreciation, and insufficiency. I may ask you, "How much money are you earning?" You might reply, "I only get $125 a week." Or if I should ask you how much you have in your pocket right now, you might reply, "I only have $19.73. I say, "Why the only?" The disciples brought one boy's lunch, consisting of 5 loaves and 2 fishes, when they were investigating the possibilities of feeding the throng of 5,000 people. You can imagine Jesus asking them, "What do you have at hand?" They probably replied, "Only this small boy's lunch." Again, why the only? Certainly that lunch did not represent enough food to feed the multitude, but there was enough substance, for there is no quantity in universal substance. Your present income does not seem adequate to meet your needs. There's just enough money, but there is enough substance. Whether it is $1 or $100 or $1,000, don't see it as a symbol of lack. Bless it as substance and identify it as the symbol of abundance. Your prosperity may depend not so much on the money you have as upon the attitudes you have about your money. On the money of the United States is the motto E Pluribus Unum, one out of many. This is the great law of the universe in three words. Isn't this the whole story of man's discovery of his relationship to the infinite? At first he thinks himself to be separated from the divine, and he believes in many gods. Gradually, he passes from many gods into the realization of one God. Then, he comes to know his essential unity with God, which is salvation. He comes to know the unity of all life, the cosmic process in which the One diversifies itself in the universe and individualizes itself in man. And in the many channels for his supply, yet without ever ceasing to be one. The money also bears the wonderful affirmation, in God we trust. The greatest danger associated with money is the tendency to see it as security in itself. In great wisdom, the government gives the antidote, a kind of preventative treatment. How important it is to get ideas of substance and supply and support in right perspective. Whenever income is received from any source, it is well to affirm something like this: I look to God as the source of my supply, and I bless the many channels through which it manifests. In the business world, there is the delusion that material capital principal is almighty and all-important. Nothing else matters. However, this is completely erroneous. Any successful business venture demonstrates that integrity and service have been the key to the public confidence that created the success. J. Pierpont Morgan is reputed to have said, when someone queried him about making great business loans on slender credit, "I look at his character before I look at his collateral." In other words, he was more concerned with what he was worthy of than what he was worth. In every case, the real capital was spiritual, principal. Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you." Matthew 6:33. He was saying, in effect, seek first the principle, and the principle will follow. The key to the step from indigence to affluence is spiritual principle. Poverty is not corrected by dollars, but by non-material substance, and there is never a shortage of this substance in the universe. Even within the apparent condition of indigence, the only lack in terms of the principle is the thought of lack. You're always as rich as you think you are. And the only poverty is of the mind. You can do something about your financial position in life by reshaping your attitudes about yourself, about money in general, and about your work as a source of money in particular. There is a perfectly good word that has been stored away along with many Sunday religious practices in the six-day closet of unconcern. It is the word bless. To bless means to confer prosperity upon. You may confer prosperity upon your money, your job, and all your involvements in life. Bless your job. Bless your money and your investments. Know that God is the source of your supply, while the job, the investments, the annuities are the channels through which it comes. Remember, the universe owes you a living. Claim it. But you owe the world a life. Live it creatively. Give thanks that your mind is one with the same mind that is in the genius, the affluent, and the successful. Within you now is the unborn possibility of success and creative activity. Yours is the privilege of giving birth to it. And that concludes From Poverty to Prosperity. I really like this reading because it makes some very salient and powerful points. God is always your supply. I lost a business that provided me a lot of money. And I immediately remembered this particular teaching, this idea that God was my supply. And it really helped me out. I could have just gotten saddened and worried, concerned and stressed because this entire resource of income was now gone. But I knew that great things were on the way because that was not the source of my supply. If you're getting money from your parents or the government or even the job that you have or the corporation that you're in, that is not your source. God is the source of your supply. And you will always be more satisfied if you're doing something for it, performing some kind of service rather than simply receiving it. There's some part of you that becomes sick and ill if you're just receiving money without anything in return. Once you get into the process of life and you fulfill your creative opportunities and potentials, it changes who you are. Understand there are multiple sources of income in the world and they all come from one source. There's an infinite substance available in the world and unlimited possibilities are available to you. When you go outside, look at the whole world as yours. Every tree, every cloud, every bird is all yours. You have dominion over it and you have the right to receive this prosperity in your life. There will always be poverty. It is a spiritual lesson within this simulation that we are in. How we address it and how we deal with it, how we think about it, helps to create our own lives and the lives around us. Yes, I will always give $5, $10, $20 to somebody on the street because I know that it's tough. And right then they need it, but I'll do something more. I'll imagine for them. I will imagine that they are receiving a job, that they're doing something of service, they're creative and happy and joyful. That is the key. This is not a political statement. This is a spiritual statement about who you are. If you're sitting at home and your parents have taken care of you your whole life, I still love you, but I'm saying there's got to be something missing within you. And if you can go out and create and do something to receive money, you begin to become a part of the process of God in action. For all money is God in action. When you understand this, it becomes everything. Money is the key focal point of divine focus for the thoughts that you think and the energy that you have. Money is energy. So by giving your energy and money, you begin the process of becoming God in action. It is a very powerful principle and important to understand. So if you're struggling or you've recently lost a job or lost an investment, I know it's hard, but let it go. And remember, your thoughts are creating reality in all moments. And remember, the key point to this teaching is the unity of all life. Every blade of grass, every piece of dust is all one, and you are a part of that oneness. Access this oneness and all is available to you, for it is all you. You can find all episodes of The Reality Revolution at therealityrevolution.com. Check out my art at www.newearth.art. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.